At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Gremling.
And I'm Connor Orr.
Connor Orr playing hurt, by the way.
Oof.
It's that time of year. Everyone's playing hurt.
COVID protocol. I've been down in this basement for a week now. No one will let me out.
That's why people don't know, but usually we record the show at the same place. You actually sit in my lap for most of the show. But no, we are in separate places now.
By the way, we have great listeners, and the feedback, I have to say, recently has been really, really good. I got a taxpayer note on Taylor Heinicke today, which warmed my heart. So if anybody has any good kind of COVID bounce back remedies, let me know. I'm vaccinated, but I don't need you to sell me on like ivermectin or anything, but if anybody's like, yeah, you know, like, I don't know. The ginger chamomile tea makes me feel better. I'll take that. That's kind of what I'm looking. That's my wheelhouse. That's what I'm looking.
Not looking for. I got a podcast from a guy who used to be on news radio.
I'm not trying to get immunized. No.
Let's dive into this thing. We are starting with probably the least watchable game of the season, and we're going to start with the on the field stuff, and then touch on some of the coverage of Deshaun Watson's return to the NFL regular season. Browns at Texans. Like I said, we'll start with the on the field. This was every bit as shaky as I guess we feared. You could say feared. Feared seems like an overstatement because it's going to be a process to kind of get him back up to speed here. But this was a quarterback who was dreadfully inaccurate. He looked frantic. I thought the play that really summed this up was that RPO where he just sort of spiked it into the ground in front of Amari Cooper. There was no smoothness to that. That just looked, if you ask me to run an RPO in an NFL game, that's the kind of like frantic, panicked action you would get. And the throw would probably get about a third of the way that throw got.
Yeah, I was actually just going to mention that. That was a good call. Game plan wise, this is what we expected them to do. It was a lot of run heavy stuff. It was a lot of Watson under center. And then I think throughout the game, you saw them trying to broaden it just a little bit, give him a little bit more latitude. And you can tell, right, because sometimes the announcers will say things, and clearly it's stuff that's been bouncing around the facility. And we'll get to what they said about Watson, the person, in a minute. But one of the things that they said was, well, when this offense gets up to speed, the RPO is going to be a big part of that. Well, that's not good if this is what an RPO looks like now. And it's also not good because your best wide receiver is Amari Cooper. You know, I think a lot of the teams in your division could play pretty capable man coverage and kind of shut down RPOs. They'll be pretty good physically there. But who knows? I mean, I'm sure the touch on the ball will come back. I'm sure a lot of things will come back. My thought is that Deshaun will have to be far more reliant on his legs upon his return than he was prior to. And that's not a reflection of anything other than a lot of mobile quarterbacks are now way more reliant on their legs than they were before in order to break kind of the cover two man, the mystique of that. So I do think he ran into a lot of that today where some of the stuff that he used to be able to do is just not there anymore. And that's scary for a quarterback for the first time you see it.
Yeah, it's not a red flag type of performance, but it is kind of a reminder that this is, if he is ever going to be the Deshaun Watson of old on the field, it's going to take longer than one game to figure that out. The interception he had was a single high look. I think, obviously, he did not process very well on the play. He also had a rusher in his face. He thought that window was going to be there, and it was probably partially a matter of getting hit in the face mask as you are letting that ball go. And that's when Jalen Petre, the young rookie safety, kind of pivoted, fell off the guy he was following, and had the easy interception in the red zone. Again, I, you know, the processing stuff wasn't great. The physical stuff wasn't great. And it just, it wasn't very good.
He seemed to me to be a bit reluctant to run the football. I don't know if that was just me or not. And this could be me forgetting a little bit of where he was a couple of years ago, but I do remember a couple of years ago him running almost to a fault, or Bill O'Brien running him almost to a fault, where, you know, there were times when I remember the conversation in Houston locally being, oh my gosh, this guy can't take any more hits. And then Bill O'Brien's like, yeah, baby, end around, who care, you know, QB boot. But today it seemed like there was a little bit more of a hesitancy, and also just, and again, this can all be, this is all conditioning, this is all stuff that's going to work itself out in time, but just not like a, not like a game-breaking speed that I remember, too. Like, yeah, especially in the pocket, there seemed to, you lack that swiftness. But again, this is all very easy. You know, if I hadn't done something in 700 days, I'd look pretty rusty, too.
Yes.
I would imagine.
Yeah, I think jelly legs is maybe the term that would come into play in a scenario like this. But yeah, that's the way it went here. The Browns win this game based on defense and special teams. They did not score an offensive touchdown. If you are scoring at home, the I again, Kyle Allen, I bet he's a really nice guy. He's got a nice comeback story coming off that injury and all that. I don't know how else to say it. You are just not serious as a professional football outfit if you are putting him out on the field as your starting quarterback. Professional football is not your passion, I think is how I would phrase it. It's, and I'm not a guy who is like, oh, well, you got to see what you have in Davis Mills. I think you have a pretty idea, pretty good idea of what you have in Davis Mills. And assuming you have the number one overall pick and you're going to take Bryce Young, you don't really need to know what you have in Davis Mills. But I just cannot imagine a scenario where any human being right now could make the argument that Kyle Allen is anywhere near Davis Mills as far as his ability to play quarterback.
Yeah, it was distracting. I mean, this game was horrible for multiple reasons, but just to watch this thing unfold, sort of an insult. And it's so funny, you watch that, and I saw Judy Batista from NFL Network tweeted the same thing. You watch that game, and then you kind of write about Deshaun, and then you come to like midway through the second quarter, you know, about halftime of like, you know, 49ers, Dolphins,
yeah,
Chiefs, Bengals. And you're just like, wait a minute, this is a different sport.
What did I just do for 3 hours?
it was something else.
I really got to make some changes. Yeah, that's just kind of how, man, Jacoby Brissett must have been so, God, just so heartbroken.
Watching. How insulted were you when they trotted him out there for just a third and fourth and one handoff, or third and one handoff?
By a wide margin, the best quarterback on the field today was Jacoby Brissett. just the way it was. So let's talk about the you know, the presentation of this. I'll speak about it broadly, and you can sort of delve into more details here. This game was presented, and I do want to get in the habit of a lot of people will say, like, ooh, you know, insider reporter, and like, no, they're all presenters. They are presenting an NFL-approved, team-approved, you know, game to you. These are not journalists. These are not reporters. These are presenters. What they had for this game, the NFL basically went forward as if no one in the world would ever watch this game, which maybe was advice we should have taken. It was, you know, a bottom-rung team for CBS. We love Spiridatis. This was not a great day for him. This is not a team that was really capable of covering this game in the way it should have been covered. It was Spiridatis and Jay Feely in the booth. It was Aditi Kinkabwala on the sideline. I guess I was a little bit surprised that Aditi was down there because whether it was her choice or not, they did have her do that really awkward, just ridiculous interview before the preseason game with Deshaun Watson, which I would have thought you just not want to have her in the return game. But the NFL didn't really seem to care. You had Land Clark's crew as the officiating crew. They tend to get the games that the NFL assumes no one will watch, and I think a lot of people kind of figured out why they're not great with game administration. And that's the way it was.
Yeah, I think I had a lot of trouble with the wording of things. Spiro, again, I mean, I think you and I both think he's really good at this, and you're right. I mean, it's a presentation thing. But to say things like Deshaun Watson's long road back to the NFL, or Jimmy Haslam made a big gamble on signing Watson, why? Why is that a big gamble? Why is it a long road back? It takes you an extra 3 seconds to say, and, you know, we have uniform language now that we use. I don't know. Time me, Gary. More than 24 lawsuits detailing graphic accounts of sexual harassment and sexual assault. I don't know how long that took, but you can squeeze that in. You know, Jimmy Haslam made a big gamble because he signed someone who had been sued by more than 24 people for, you know, lawsuits containing graphic allegations of sexual misconduct and assault. There you go. Like, that's why it's a big gamble. Not like, you know, it's not Alex Smith. You're not signing him after a broken leg. This is a different thing. But by using that language, you're bundling everything in together. And it's just a weird thing. Like, and long road back, listen, I am sure that there is some difficult stuff going on in counseling that Deshaun is going through right now. You know, I respect his decision not to say anything about it. I would guess that a lot of counselors would probably recommend you not going out and doing media interviews if you're learning about kind of the dark parts of yourself at that point in your life. But, you know, there has to be more of a why or a what or something in this broadcast. We can't cloak this stuff in platitudes yet. You know, this is his first game back. Like, yeah. You know, I know from a PR perspective, maybe the Browns are like, oh, we just got to take our medicine, get through this game. One or two games will be tough. This isn't tough. You know, this isn't tough. I'm sorry. This was a moderate to pro Deshaun broadcast, if I had to say so. I mean, if you were an alien from outer space and you came back and you turned this game on in the second quarter and started watching it, you'd think it was a guy who tore his rotator cuff and recovered off season.
You'd
by
be
a surgery.
Like, oh, what happened to that poor guy?
Yeah. Yeah. That's it.
First of all, I timed you at 4:06 in getting out the explanation there. A pro could probably do it in like 4:03.
Wow. I never did anything in 4:06.
So pretty good. Our good friend, Jenny Wrench of the New York Times, was the lone person who asked a non-football question in Deshaun Watson's podium session after the game. He again went back to the language that he'd used earlier last week, that his counselor and his legal team had advised him to not speak publicly about, again, I believe the number is 29 women who have publicly shared, you know, accounts of sexual harassment and sexual assault. The issue is going to be, and there are two things. Number one, you're very astute to point out, this is the first time back, we are not going to have a thing, and I'm not sure we should have a thing, where in his 73rd game back, we are still, you know, sort of recounting this on every throw he makes. So, you know, you kind of... It will kind of diffuse, dilute, go into the background as time passes, as it did with Ben Roethlisberger, as it did with Antonio Brown, as it did with a lot of other folks. But again, I know a lot of people will say, like, oh, why are we still, I'm done with this, why are we still talking about it, et cetera, et cetera. There was a very real and very important chilling effect he had when he came out in August and said, these people are lying. His legal team has publicly said, these people are all lying. Deshaun's phrasing was, he hasn't done anything wrong, he hasn't disrespected anyone, etc. From a micro level, it very much affects the women who have come forward about him, because now they have, and you've seen them on social media, the people who are you know, throwing out their gold digger conspiracy theories, they're all, you know, some of them are going directly at these women. That is a very bad way to to basically have to live your life with these people constantly harassing you. And the other thing is, at larger scale, women who might want to come forward, or men who might want to come forward and you know, raise this issue with someone else, you know, they're seeing the way this plays out, and you know, you're kind of thinking like, I don't know, no thanks. Do I really want to do this? Do I really want to deal with this? So that's why it's important at some point he does publicly acknowledge what he's done, and you know, we're not at that step yet. And if you know, a professional counselor tells him he's not at that step, I guess we just wait.
I mean, so I have talked to people in the mental health space about, you know, if you're a public person, you know, where do you, and this had nothing to do with Deshaun. This was, you know, something I was working on for something else, but you know, where do you draw the line between you're going through your own process, right? And you know, more, you know, I was more at the time thinking of, you know, athletes like Michael Phelps, you know, who had been kind of out about seeing a counselor for separate reasons, obviously. But, you know, where do you draw the line between, you know, them needing to get better for themselves and figure out what's going on with themselves, and then immediately kind of burdening the responsibility of this recovery? And, you know, it's a tricky process, right? There's a lot of landmines. So I do, there's part of me that buys the idea that, like, okay, I shouldn't be talking about this right now, because it's only been, you know, if you were to say it's only been 13 weeks, I'm learning a lot about what's going on with me. You know, I'm not ready to have that conversation yet. But my counselor and the NFL are talking. They think I'm in a good space to do this. You know, does it make me feel great about the situation? No, but I can get it. You know, I can kind of almost get there. But, I mean, I don't know. Like, at some point, my guess is he's going to, in a one-on-one setting with a reporter he's comfortable with, eventually come in with something that's a little more rehearsed, and that he's never really going to talk about it publicly with people who are going to ask legitimate questions about it.
I think that's very true. And right now I'm going to make a very sharp pivot. In honor of CBS's coverage, I do want to introduce our Simpsons clip of the day.
Dave Shutton, Springfield Daily Shopper. Who are you? Where are you going?
No, do your research, Shutton.
Oh, I love Shutton. It was a very Shutton performance from the CBS team, and that's just the way it went. That is, of course, Waylon Smithers after he had turned himself in for the shooting of C. Montgomery Burns. Serious stuff. We've got lots of silly football stuff coming up here.
Chiefs, Bengals.
All right, so here we got the Chiefs. They're just kind of owned by the Bengals at this point. The Cincinnati Bengals are for real. I'm glad that today kind of reestablished that. And we had another really just spectacular performance from Joe Burrow.
Do you want to hear some good football stats, Gary?
Yes, always.
Not good football stats. These are not good football stats. They're interesting football stats.
That's much different.
Yeah.
Do you want something good? Okay, here's something not good.
Would you like ice cream, Gary? here's a squash. Joe Burrow is the first quarterback to defeat a team quarterbacked by Patrick Mahomes in three straight head-to-head matchups. Mm-hmm. There is only two quarterbacks who have defeated a team quarterbacked by Patrick Mahomes three or more times. The other is Tom Brady. And
wow.
Joe Burrow is the only QB to face Mahomes multiple times and be undefeated in a head-to-head matchup, including the playoffs. So, pretty wild, right?
Yeah, yeah. And look, this was a fun quarterback duel here. I think both guys equipped themselves well. I think the Chiefs, as we've seen at times over the last couple of years, it was kind of an execution issue day for them. I do think they have some issues against this Bengals defense. I think what Lou Anarumo is doing, what the pass rush is doing, and what they're doing dropping so many bodies into coverage is obviously affecting them. But you had some drops. You had some sort of misplays that probably should be there for Kansas City, but they weren't there.
Yeah. I think my new favorite player is Samaje Perine, by the way. This was a very Samaje Perine game, even though there's a lot of spectacular things we have to get to, but good young quarterbacks who hit the check down, they move the ball, and when you're check down guys, Samaje Perine, I was thinking about an apt comparison stylistically for him. He's a big back. I didn't realize how large he was and the fact that he has really good hands for his size. But I was thinking about, what's like a stylistic comparison for him? And I don't know. I mean, at first it was like, okay, it's like a Marshawn Lynchian style. But I was like, no, I mean, not every running back who breaks tackles is Marshawn Lynch. Marshawn Lynch didn't invent broken tackles. This is a more... like he's not flailing as much. Like
correct.
It's not like it's not as much of like a punching bout thing, but it's just such a grind to tackle that guy. And I just looked it up. He's 5'11", 240 pounds. I would have thought he was Brandon Jacobs size. Just the way that he plays, he's got such a commanding presence in there.
He's a bowling ball type of build. He is, and you're totally right. I mean, Marshawn Lynch's calling card was kind of the thrashing, violent. That's a whole other thing. Whereas Samaje Perine is kind of, I think the size combined with the low center of gravity and the contact balance and all that stuff, he's a push the pile guy. And you saw it today. He just kind of walked through some tackles. He's kind of a one speed guy. There's not like I don't think anyone's mind is blown. Or I should say a less of a connoisseur, their minds would not be blown by his running style. But, he's just one of those guys where it's like, oh, there's not a whole lot there. Oh, he's 6 yards upfield. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah. Just, stylistically, you don't think about, and when Joe Mixon's healthy, he'll be back next week. He missed this week. Couldn't clear the concussion protocol. Well, theoretically, he'll be back next week. But a guy like, these two guys, we talk about the success of the true two-back backfields that end up healthy together at the end of the season and what a boon that can be. Green Bay was obviously our dream scenario, I think, for a team that had that. Mm-hmm. But Cincinnati, I would not put them – I mean, Perine is not a slouch, and he's a perfect third-down back, and he's a good pass protector, and then you throw Joe Mixon in. That's a real part of this, and yes, I mean, there's a lot to talk about in terms of the catches, in terms of what Joe Burrow did, but that is a big part of this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And look, Ja'Marr Chase was back for this one, played a big role. It was kind of the Bengals in full here. And, 27-24, but it was funny. Like, this game was coming down the stretch in the fourth quarter, and I was like, man, Chiefs are just kind of like sticking around. They're like just hanging by a thread throughout this entire game. Like the Bengals are just the better team.
Yeah. You know what else I learned today that I didn't know about, like, I don't know, the outer reaches of the human body?
Okay. Is this good or bad? I don't know if I want to hear it.
No, it's good. I'm not gonna okie-dokie like I did before about the good stat, bad stat thing. This is just an interesting observation. Not interesting, but, well, I did it again. It's not interesting. But Joe Burrow is Joe Burrow is a lot more athletic than I gave him credit for, too. There was a couple open field runs today where he was chugging.
I believe the phrase I'm searching for is a deceptively athletic.
Oh.
I don't quite know why. But no, it's the stuff behind the line of scrimmage, the way he navigates traffic behind the line of scrimmage that sets him apart. And yeah, look, I feel like, you never want to do like heavy reoption things with him or something like that. You don't want to put him in harm's way, but he's in that, probably a little bit less than Daniel Jones, but yeah, he can pick up a chunk. You want to give him a chunk, he'll pick up a chunk.
What his what his rushing performance reminded me of today was a couple of these games over the last few weeks where we saw Patrick Mahomes maybe log, okay, 60, 70 rushing yards, but it's the kind of rushing performance that puts defenses kind of back on their heels a little bit. And I thought that was, you know, I mean, Joe Burrow rushed the ball 11 times for 50 yards today. And, you know, 5 yards a carry. That's tough. That's tough to defend, you know?
Dolphins 49ers.
By the way, Connor, your Joe Burrow stat, it was good. That was a good stat.
Did you think so?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like a deep dive, but you know, it was nice. It was for the broader audience. You know, it wasn't like a Sports Info Solutions type stat, which is also good, but another kind of good. Sometimes you just want like a Reese's peanut butter cup or something like that. That's what that stat was.
It's feeling like a. So I have a good candy hot take before we get going on this. So before I got sick, perhaps where I got sick, I was at a wedding and they had a candy bar there.
Okay.
And not like just one candy bar, a car that wheeled up like a big limousine full of candy that just pulled up to the venue and you got to fill your bag with whatever you wanted. Candy wise. And so a couple of people came back and they were like, yeah, you know, there's candy outside, whatever. I got a few Reese's. So I went over there and I took my time and I actually looked in some of the deeper recesses of this person's selection. And I got a couple boxes of candy cigarettes, Roundup candy cigarettes.
Ooh.
And Blue Raspberry Big League Chew, which I don't know if any of you guys have ever played or gals out there have played Little League, but that was as good as it got. If your parents bought you a canned Gatorade and some Big League Chew, like that was top of the pops. And when I walked back into the wedding, everyone was like, holy shit, they had candy cigarettes? And everybody ran back out to go to go get them. And so I...
Did Philip Morris put on this wedding? Like all the stepping stone candies for tobacco use later in life?
Oh, I didn't even realize that.
Oh,
man,
yeah.
As a former smoker and chewing tobacco user, I guess I'm somewhat susceptible to the marketing, Gary. That's true.
That's why you love that so much.
Damn. No, the point was,
yeah,
you have the candy for the masses and you also have the candy for the true.
Yes.
You know,
yep.
For the true, I don't know what you'd call
candy cigarettes were amazing. Are
candy
amazing
cigarettes
still
are still really good.
Yep.
They hold up well. They look hilarious when you're just walking around in a suit indoors. It's the whole thing is really good, and Roundup is my brand. Gotta stay loyal to your
nice
to your candy cigarettes.
Roll them up, put them in your sleeve like a 1950s greaser. So we're onto the Dolphins 49ers. We're actually onto the sad injured quarterback part of the show.
Yeah.
And we'll start. We'll start with the winning team, the 49ers. Lose Jimmy Garoppolo in this game. As you wrote last week, you know, the headline of the piece was, you know, 2022 has become the year of Jimmy G, but that was kind of, if you read the piece, meant to say it's the year that the 49ers are so good and built so well for the current NFL that they can kind of win with anyone at quarterback.
Yeah, and this was the perfect example. I wish, boy, I wish people still read things, Gary, because I think today would have been the day where they would have been where they would have said, Connor, you're absolutely right. So we have a lot of factors at play here. This is a too high man league, which means you get a lot of space right in the intermediate part of right in front of the quarterback. This is one of the worst. This is probably the worst tackling era of the NFL. This is one of the highest attrition rates. You know, guys are hurt more, playing surfaces are terrible. So all these disaster scenarios where you almost never have your ideal starting defense on the field, which means, again, you have to stay more vanilla, which means, again, you have to stay in these coverages that present a lot of open space right in front of the quarterback. And then you have the 49ers who are like, you know what, we are just going to get every tackle breaker in the NFL. and we're just going to hand them the football. And they're going to turn six-yard gains into nine-yard gains, and it's going to drive people crazy. And that's how Jimmy Garoppolo was gaining all these yards this year and scoring all these touchdowns. And Brock Purdy came in today and said, yeah, I'll take it. Just give me that check down. Give me George Kittle. I counted. I went back and I looked at one of the Debo Samuel receptions. He got this ball. I think it was a catch. It might have been a carry. I think it was a catch, though. He got this ball and then started running by the sideline, and he turned his body parallel to the sideline and, like, shuffled along the sideline at full speed and gained an extra 5 yards doing that. It's crazy, because with Debo and a lot of Debo and Ayuk especially and Christian McCaffrey, we should not just be counting broken tackles, but yardage that you're adding in situations where less athletic guys would have just fallen out of bounds. You know what I mean? Like, just like extra, whatever that is, special yardage. I don't know what you want to call it.
It's yak above replacement player. So it's like yak vorp.
Yeah.
So PFF's got to start working on that.
Yeah, come on, guys. Get me some yak vorp.
So yeah, Brock Purdy, at least for today, was fine. The Dolphins threw a bunch of different stuff at him. There was a period in the second quarter where it was like zero blitz after zero blitz, and he handled that well enough. Kyle Shanahan, you know, got a quick screen out to Christian McCaffrey. They had answers here, I guess, is the takeaway. He did miss a couple throws. He had that one third down. It was sort of like a key third down to seal the game, where they ran play action. Everyone chased McCaffrey, and Purdy rolled out, and he threw to Kittle for like the 3 yard gain. But he also had, I think it was Tyler Kroft, Tyler Kroft could have caught that ball. He was so wide open, he could have run back to the opposite end zone and then run another 100 yards to score the touchdown, I think. I mean, we'd have to game that out. But, it was workable. And it's especially workable with what this defense is, which is very good. They essentially gave up one big play and one drive to the hottest offense in football. And it's like, it's the linebacker play, man. It's the pass rush, but, like, it's the linebacker play. And I think that really was especially problematic for the Dolphins. And people are going to put out theories on why Tua Tagovailoa struggled in this one. Was he jittery, taking some hits? Was it just an off day? I think a lot of it was they made him layer throws over the middle of the field instead of just getting to sort of hit those sort of direct laser throw windows, and he struggled with it. And he, you know, a lot of teams are going to struggle with it when you face Fred Warner, especially, but also Dre Greenlaw, who just, they're long guys, they cover a lot of ground in the middle of the field, and I think that's what it ended up being here for the Dolphins.
Yeah, that the one Fred Warner, you're talking about the tip, too, that he had, that was...
Yeah,
just supreme athleticism. He's so good. And I think that they can play that game. They can be an antidote to their own offense a little bit better than the Dolphins defense can. And I'll be interested to go back and see the blitz stats. Did you get the feeling that they were kind of bringing some heat? And if not heat, like kind of more simulated pressure looks at Tua today? It felt like, I don't know, and I could be wrong. It could have been me, just like a couple of plays stood out, but it seemed like to me that they were trying to speed him up a little bit too.
I don't know if the blitz rate was higher than the 49ers usually have. It probably was slightly higher. I feel like it's more blitzing than the Dolphins have seen for the most part this year, because everyone's just playing, for obvious reasons, with Tyreek Hill out there, everyone's just sort of playing terrified. Jalen Waddle also was banged up. He played a little bit in this one, but not that many snaps, and he wasn't 100%. But we talked on the midweek show about how will the 49ers handle motion, and the game literally started with a complete overreaction to Tyreek Hill motion that leads to a Trent Sherfield, basically a 3 yard pass that is a 75-yard touchdown, and that's as bad as it could be. Other than that, you had a really well-called drive by Mike McDaniel that opened up the long Tyreek Hill touchdown that I think was a little more sustainable if you're a Dolphins fan when you look at that. But it was it was a really rocky day for the offense. You hope it's just one of those days against a really good defense, but you know, there was sort of a sense of what you saw from Tua Tagovailoa late the last two seasons, where it's just it's not good enough. If especially with the defense kind of being middling, it's a great system. The receivers were open. He has to hit them. Like, he just has to be better than this going forward.
Yeah. I agree. I think it's important to mention, too, some a couple good plays by the Gink, player of the MMQB podcast, Andrew Van Winkle. Yep. He was there today. He showed up. But, yeah, I agree with you. I thought they kind of – you saw a little bit of the borrowing of sort of the delayed motion coverage, which I think we were talking about with the Patriots earlier in the week where – and it didn't work. I think they had Jimmy Ward on Tyreek Hill, and they were saying, okay, well, maybe we're going to cover him, maybe we're not. And that doesn't really work unless you have the certain kind of quarter defensive back, mm-hmm. where you kind of wait to declare that you're the guy that's covering him, and then you try to undercut the route and intercept it. But I saw them try that a couple times. It's all interesting. I think this is a really good chess match moment. I mean, it's a huge confidence builder for this 49ers defense, which, you know, especially before the half, some of the blitzes that they dialed up, and Bosa was just unstoppable today, too. I mean, you know, and it's easier to win when you play games like that.
Yeah.
Broncos, Ravens.
So the Ravens outlast the Broncos. They get a late touchdown. Tyler Huntley run here to win 10-9. I don't know if I can bear to talk about this Russell Wilson offense any more than we already have this year. But the big news from this one, from the big picture standpoint, is Lamar Jackson going out with the injury. So we're back to Tyler Huntley as we were late last season. And it's going to be interesting to see how teams defend Tyler Huntley, because I think there was something of a honeymoon phase. I do think he's a capable number two quarterback, but there was something of a honeymoon phase, and it kind of dried up for him as the year went on. And I think if Lamar Jackson is going to miss time and Huntley is going to be the guy, I think there's probably a little more of a book on him. And, you know, again, the Ravens are very good defensively. Maybe they can win some of these 10-9 type of games, but this, if it's no Lamar, this is just not, it's not a Super Bowl contender.
It's curtains on this season, especially with how well the Bengals are playing, the Browns getting back to Deshaun and still having a lot of, I think they still have the Ravens on their schedule. You're just not going to be able to do that. Their passing game isn't sophisticated enough to be able to run, like, to scheme guys open. You know, so much of it depends on what Lamar is doing in order to draw them open, and you can't replicate that with somebody else. That's like, I'm not going to try to say it again. Remember when I tried to pronounce the guy who is the lead in Hamilton, Lin?
Now I have a mental block on it. Lin-Manuel Miranda?
Lin-Manuel Miranda. It's like when Lin-Manuel Miranda is out and you're trying to run Hamilton. It's just it's not Hamilton. Sorry.
No.
I know you're a big Hamilton guy, but
I've saw it live in Hartford. It's a good show. It's a nice show. The other sort of big picture takeaway here is contract wise. You know, this is a contract year for Lamar Jackson. Were the Ravens right to be hesitant to sign him to the long-term deal in fear of this kind of scenario with his playing style? It's all kind of ridiculous, but it's also why it's important that he get his long-term deal, because it's kind of unfair to ask him to run this offense that is just not, it's just not very good anymore. And it just depends on him making plays with his legs way too often.
It's, I don't know what the right answer is, right? Because you're exactly right. You're asking someone to do something very specific and then refusing to pay him for it because the way that you're asking him to do it is too dangerous. You know what I mean? It's like if your parents asked you to clean the house by licking your hands and rubbing the floor, and then you kept getting sick, and they were like, well, we don't like him because he's sick all the time. It's because he's licking his hands and rubbing the floor, you know?
Are my parents kicking me out of the house for that? Man.
But that's how it is. I don't know if I've said this all along, so I can't say I've said this all along. I've thought this all along, that they were always going to make – the Ravens were always going to make this negotiation drawn out and difficult, and I think this makes it way more drawn out and difficult than it needs to be.
Jets, Vikings.
All right, Mike White, Chapter 2 in this one. This was a boy, what a heartbreaker for the Jets here. They fall behind, and they get back into it, and – this game came down to they kicked way too many field goals. They kicked a lot of field goals and didn't score touchdowns, and they had a chance to score a go-ahead touchdown, two plays from the one-yard line in the final 2 minutes, and they didn't score a touchdown. And that's the way it ends up playing out. They lose the turnover battle 2-0, and they go one touchdown and 6 red zone trips, while the Vikings go 3-for-3 in the red zone. That's how you lose to a team that you're, I'll say it, Jets are better than the Vikings. That's just the truth. It's just the truth.
Wow. See, this is why we need you to get back on the power rankings, Gary. Because that could facilitate your take, you know?
Yeah. But hey, Vikings get the win. They're 10-2. That's what they go by.
Yeah, so they had the little Kirk Cousins child there, and that was nice. And they got the tipped interception, which is always, I mean, again, like you're saying, right? It's not indicative of preparedness or anything, but it's one of these situations where it's like, okay, yeah, you got a tip ball that kind of helped point you in the right direction. And sometimes that's just how these games go. But I like what the Jets are doing, man. And I think it was midway through the first quarter, there was a crazy Corey Davis backfield motion thing where they were able to dump him off the ball and get him with a full head of steam moving forward. And I was like, man, this team is fun. They've got a lot of playmakers, and Mike White is not perfect, but at this point, he's better than Russell Wilson. So, you know, you have that was a fair bet.
It's not unfair. I would just say it's a low bar this year.
It is a low bar, but, you know, just one of these guys that you could throw in and everything kind of, you know, at least runs the way that it's supposed to run. But, yeah, I don't know. I think this is a fun team, and I'll tell you what, any other year, going back to the end of the Rex Ryan era, if they get behind like this, they're packing it in. And I do think that there's something to be said about this team does not quit, and boy, do I sound like a platitude machine right now, but let me see if I can do 3 more. They never give up. When the going gets tough, the Jets get going. It's true. I think the character of this team has changed. I don't know if that's, you know, as a cold spreadsheet kind of guy, Gary, I don't know if that's something you can appreciate.
No, look, my spreadsheet appreciates them. It had them, let me tell you exactly where it had them coming into this week. In, again, this is the luck-adjusted point differential spreadsheet, which, you know, it mitigates all the sort of small sample size but incredibly impactful plays, fourth and short conversion rate, red zone success, stuff like that. And they're probably going to move up after only losing by 5 in a game where you go, you know, basically have so many struggles. They were 10th coming into this game on the spreadsheet. Vikings were 16th, by the way.
Okay. All right.
So?
Yeah. I don't know if there's anything else you have. It was a good Dalvin Cook game. He was good today.
Yeah.
Cook had some great moments.
He is. He's a good player. He runs well.
Commanders, Giants.
All right, we'll say in New York, not that the Jets played in New York. That would have been weird if they had both teams sort of like cut the field in half and play on like a 60-yard field.
Yeah.
Maybe. Sweep.
They do that sometimes. Not to cut you off, Gary. I was just very excited about this. They do that sometimes.
Where?
Not in the NFL, but at MetLife Stadium at halftime,
okay.
They have like the peewee, like the 20-minute peewee games,
yeah.
Where they let the kids play the exhibition and they do each of them from the 20 into the end zone. And
okay.
It's cute. There's like a bunch of little kids in a giant field, and they can't run that far. It's very enjoyable.
Okay, all right. Something to think about if there's ever a year where the Giants and Jets both have very small people on their team. Maybe you can pull it off that way. But the Jets were on Minnesota. The Giants were home in East Rutherford. This game, look, it was probably a fitting ending for this to be a tie. The taxpayer, Taylor Heinicke, makes a couple of plays late, gets the touchdown here. Nice catch and run by Jahan Dotson to tie this one up. If you're the Giants, this is infuriating because they were up by a touchdown in the fourth quarter. There were two or three drives where they could have just salted the game away. They just needed to hang on to the ball for a little bit and maybe kick a field goal, and that would have been it, and they just couldn't get it.
Yeah, I was surprised at especially on the game tying touchdown drive for the Commanders. How, and again, I mean, yeah, you have a cornerback that you just called up from the practice squad, mm-hmm. and so it's not on Curtis Samuel. So it's not like you can win the Paul Brown Award here for innovation. You kind of pick on the worst guy on the field at that moment in time. But there were big vacant spaces in that Giants defense. I'm talking about 10 to 15 yards downfield on outbreaking routes toward the sideline. And it wasn't just that the one cornerback in particular. And I was surprised that, you know, that's what you're kind of giving the Commanders. Now, I don't know what your book on Heinicke, you know, Taylor Heinicke pays his taxes. Maybe he doesn't throw deep outs that well. I know it's a challenging throw in the NFL canon. Like, not a lot of guys do that particularly well. I was surprised that that was the real estate you were handing off, and I think that ultimately helped them tie this game and then, force the tie.
It was just, I got kind of a kick out of the call, or it was more like the summation of the replay on the Dotson touchdown that tied this game and forced the overtime, because I'm not even, this is just bad podcasting, because I'm not even sure who it was. But it was identified by the commentators like, well, they got the backup in there. And it's like, that entire, like, cornerbacking core is backups.
Right.
Like, it yeah. was, remember when they beat the Packers in London? And someone got hurt. Nick McLeod had to go into the game. And I was like, oh, my goodness. Like, who is Nick McLeod? And he made a play. You know, he kind of struggled. But he made a play, and it was, like, a nice thing. And he's out there. He's in every snap player now. He made a couple of nice plays. They're mixing up coverages. Wink Martindale's doing a nice job. But it is all like these are your core special teamers are now your starting cornerbacks now. And it's kind of working.
It is working. And I think everything is I think everything's sort of coming into place for them. Today was a good Kayvon Thibodeau day. I thought he played pretty well. They're doing some really fun stuff with him too at the line, and kind of dropping him sometimes too, which I think looks kind of neat and confusing for corners, but mm-hmm. or quarterbacks. But I mean, you're right, Gary. I mean, this is a Dollar General isn't even fair to say that, because Dollar General's getting a little upscale. We have a bucking up. Do you know what that is?
No. It sounds like something you say in place of profanity.
Yeah. It's like a sub Dollar General from what I gather. But it's bucking up. Bucking up.
Okay. What does it do? What is it?
It's just like Dollar General, but sort of like cheaper.
Oh, it's a store. I thought you were talking about a product that you get at Dollar General.
No. It's like, I was saying, it's not fair to call this Giants secondary Dollar General, because I do feel like Dollar General is sort of, you know, they're classing it up a little bit.
I got General. You now. I was really lost throughout that metaphor, but I'm
yeah. I think
I'm
it's the I think it's the acetaminophen. It's really kicking in at this point. I'm rolling. One more point on this game, Gary, and yep. I'll take it home in a silly way. I'm very glad that commentators don't say after tie games anymore. Remember when everyone always said it's like kissing your sister?
Yeah.
I didn't hear anybody say that today, and it made me very happy.
Well, good.
Because that's a weird thing to say.
It is. Yeah.
Very weird.
Titans, Eagles.
So it took us a while to get here, but this game was just so lopsided. This was, I thought, the Eagles' most impressive performance of the season. They did it against a Titans team that I thought might give them some issues. And what you saw in this game was, What blew it open was a couple of plays where A.J. Brown, former Titan, of course, just physically overpowered a defensive back. The long touchdown, he just steamrolled Christian Fulton, who probably not offensive pass interference. Fulton was beat on a double move and kind of caught in the wrong place, and A.J. Brown just ran through him. And then you had that play where Brown is basically getting hugged in the end zone, and he just makes a contested catch. And, you know, it was just playmakers, just better players making plays in this game.
So, Gary, I agree with you. I think having this slate of playmakers, just it's such a built-in advantage, especially for Jalen Hurts. But I will offer this, too. I think it was on Hurts' rushing touchdown on the end around. Miles Sanders just blew a guy up. And I think he had Amani Hooker coming off the edge, and which is a critical block. I mean, that's the block on the play right there. And my point is, I do think as deep as they are from a playmaking standpoint, I think that they're doing the little things incredibly well on a very consistent basis. And sometimes that makes some of the other stuff look more easy. Does that make is that a bad take?
No, I don't think so. I think that's a perfectly fine take.
Is it pedantic? Is it a little pedantic?
No. We're usually pedantic, but no.
Okay.
I think it was all right.
All right.
Titans, look, this one got away from them. We saw one get away from them in Buffalo earlier this season. They also lost Treylon Burks in this game to, I'm guessing, what is a concussion or a, you know, possible head injury. And that he's been emerging. I don't know. He was probably a big part of their game plan, and they just couldn't get on track after that. And it just doesn't help when you give up a lot of long touchdowns as well.
It always blows my mind when an NFL player, and, you know, coaches will say this too. I mean, there are guys that are just humongous parts of their game plan. And how could you ever, as an offensive coordinator, walk into a game, unless it's Patrick Mahomes or Tom Brady, right, the quarterback, how could you ever go into a game just being like, oh, yeah, if this guy goes down, we're screwed. Like, the injury rate in the NFL is 100%, you know? Mm-hmm. But you're right. It did really seem to cause a giant hiccup. And it's tough, too, because I think we've talked about this for the last few weeks, really. Treylon Burks has really come around. And he had a rough go at the beginning. This was a rocky start with the Titans, obviously. And, you know, for a guy that was supposed to be plugged in as that one-for-one A.J. Brown replacement, just kind of didn't work out. But, I thought he was really kind of building back to a good season here.
It was, and I don't want to make light of the injury because it was a really scary injury, but it was also kind of incredible that he held on to the touchdown pass on which he was concussed, where...
Yeah.
I mean, it was scary. You couldn't tell on the broadcast if he had consciousness or not, but he was still holding on to the football, which it was just a thing.
Colts Cowboys.
Look at this, Connor. Sunday Night Football, barely, and I mean barely, avoiding the lightning-ish round. This is the latest we've ever had in the show.
Man, and. Not coincidentally, after our huge midweek episode on Jeff Saturday, not wearing a hat, pops on a hat, loses all composure on the sideline. I'm not saying one's connected to another, Gary, but I'm not saying it's not.
If I'm a Colts player, I'm reassured by that hair. That one day when my playing days are over and I'm sort of getting up there a little bit, just a little bit in years, that... You know, I might have hair like that.
Just saying.
Life
people
after
from
football.
Selsun Blue are going to be upset.
He should just worn a Selsun Blue cap. get the ball rolling when he signs a 15-year contract to be their head coach.
I know.
Oh, man, this game was interesting for like a quarter and a half. And I don't know about you, but, you know, Collinsworth is sort of like, I don't know if the Cowboys are ready for this. I think the Colts didn't like being an 11-point underdog. And I was thinking, like, you know, this is the worst the Cowboys have played with Dak Prescott in the lineup since that opening loss to the Bucs. And they're still up 8 points. And then obviously by the time the game was over, it was much more than 8 points. But I'm not sure there's a ton to take away from this game other than the Colts still, you know, Matt Ryan, just the arm talent isn't there anymore. The run game is not dominant. They just don't have answers offensively. And the Cowboys are really good.
This was probably the game that ends the Saturday pipe dream in my mind, right? Because, you know, you beat the Raiders. It was a team kind of in turmoil at that point. And then you hang close the next 2 weeks against the Eagles and the Steelers to the point where you're like, okay, he's matching wits with good coaches. And then you just get completely blown out by the Dallas Cowboys. And I think that, you know, blowouts happen in the NFL. I wonder if there is anything that you can do as a head coach, right? Like, Bill Belichick got smashed in the playoffs last year. People get demolished in games. Is there anything that Frank Reich could have done, would have done in that situation? Because we've been asking ourselves the inverse of that for a long time. Could Frank Reich have gone 1-3 during this stretch? Hell yeah, you bet your ass he could have. But could Jeff Saturday, you know, could Frank Reich have also not been blown out by the Cowboys? I don't know. Either way, if you're Jim Irsay, you got to be saying, okay, probably not worth taking my lumps for this. And in order to bring Jeff Saturday on, I'm going to have to completely make a mockery of the Rooney Rule. So why don't I just, you know, why don't I just start fresh?
I guess the way I approach it is, putting myself in the mind of Jim Irsay, which is just a fascinating place. He's looking at it as like, do you want to fire your friend? Like, okay, just so everyone knows, Connor and I have a pact. If either of us ever own an NFL team, we're hiring the other person to be head coach forever.
Yes.
1,000-year contract. 12 years after my death, they will be like, mausoleum style, like just propping me up on the sideline. We can
Jenny
have Bernie.
Prentice's GM. That's,
yeah, we can have Bernie style. That's how I'm going to coach. Is Jim Irsay looking at this as like, this is my pal. I don't want to lose my friend over trying to build a winning football team. And again, like we said, they would have gone 1-3 in the stretch with Frank Reich. They went 1-3 with Jeff Saturday. If they come back out, I'm just looking at the remaining schedule. So they have their bye at Minnesota, home against the Chargers, at the Giants, home against the Texans. If you split that, and then you find like your 3 or 4 locker room surrogates who can come out and be like, oh yeah, everything changed when Jeff Saturday got here. Like, we're pumped for a Jeff Saturday future. I think you can do it. Should you do it? No. But I think you can do it.
Probably can do it. But it's funny that you mentioned the thing about owning an NFL team, because we were playing the Powerball the other day, and we were like, what would we do with all this money? And I guess with that, before taxes, I would have had the $1.5 billion, which would have been enough to buy, like, a pretty decent minority stake in an NFL franchise, you know?
Yeah.
Enough where I could throw some weight around the decision-making process. But I always felt like you would be on my staff in one way, shape, or form. Head coach, I'm totally fine with. Jenny Vrentis was from day one locked in as GM.
Okay.
And I feel like you guys would work well together.
Yep.
And, you know, from there, I'm kind of open to suggestions. Maybe like, you know, Dennis Allen as defensive coordinator and, I'm just kidding. But yeah, I don't know what this looks like. I'm amazed by the whole thing still to this point. And, you know, if you're Jim Irsay, right, you're already too far down this road. You have to come out, you know, if anyone was going to talk to you after a game like this today and just be like, hey, you know, we didn't overreact and Frank Reich got blown out once. We're not going to overreact when Jeff Saturday gets blown out once. And this cycle will continue until it can't continue, right?
Seahawks, Rams.
All right, so let's go to the lightning-ish round with this one. Man, the Seahawks had to sweat this one out. Heavy favorites, obviously, against a Rams team that is without Matthew Stafford, without Aaron Donald, without Cooper Kupp. It's just sort of a preseason week 2 type of lineup here. And Sean McVay made it miserable for the Seahawks. Had some Geno Smith sniping with Kenneth Walker on the sideline. Looked like it might get away, but in the end, the better team ends up stealing this one late.
At the end of the game, when the Seahawks did their kind of like prevent coverage when they got the interception at the, did you watch that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
So they went into, hold on, let me, I want a Gary Gramling reaction. This is right. We're doing what the YouTube kids do here.
Okay.
So basically I'm going to set this clip up for you, Gary, and then I'm going to ask you to watch it. So this is fourth quarter, 20 seconds left. The Seahawks, they drop everybody except for three.
Yeah.
And they're basically saying, let's see how far you can throw it here, John Wolford. And like, Wolford steps up into the pocket and then just like, it looks like he's going to uncork one and then kind of just like trips a little bit and just throws it right to the Seahawks.
I saw that when it was Cody Barton got it. I kind of saw the aftermath of it because I was watching out of the corner of my eye while the better games were on.
Yeah. So this is, I'm just going to, I send it to you in our,
yeah, I see it. I'm watching it right now. Okay, you can describe my haggard face as I watch John Wolford launch this ball. Oh, it looked like he did. He kind of trip.
So something
on the turf. Like,
but you know what it reminds me of? It's like how you said earlier in the show about how if this was an RPO, like if you were asked to do an RPO throw, and again, this is no offense to John Wolford, who can throw football 50 times further than I ever could, but I would imagine, like, I would like to see an NFL defense play prevent on me, but like you'd only need to put the guys 20 yards away because I can't throw the ball that far, you know? And it's, I don't know, that kind of,
man.
Yeah, that was a tough end of that.
Is
game.
He changing his mind because no one's there? Because I'm watching where the eligible receivers are going. Okay, it looks like Tutu Atwell's going up the field, so he's probably available in some way. Man, I wonder if it's like he hasn't thrown a Hail Mary in a really long time, and his body just sort of forgot how to do it. Like he wanted to sort of torque his body fully, and this is a bummer. I'm getting sadder as I watch this on repeat.
I know. It's a rough one. But still very let me take that from so I'm not yawning when I'm coming in. Sorry. I'm a little banged up here. 3-2-1. I know. Well, let's move on, though, because I don't want to take too much away from Geno Smith, because this is another big Geno Smith day. And
yeah.
He is – they're having a season, Gary. I love it. I love this Seahawks team. I just and to be clear, I didn't at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. I thought they were going to be in line for the number one pick and replace Geno Smith. So disclaimer. But this is just – it's great. And he's throwing some darts. I mean, some of the balls, like a 10-yard out to DK Metcalf, where DK Metcalf kind of caught it on his hip as he was falling out of bounds. This is some real quarterbacking going on right here.
He's throwing some darts. He's throwing a lot of them from really, really muddy pockets, as they say. Not throwing platforms conducive to good quarterback play, and he's doing it. He's for real. This is happening.
Yeah. Do you think you gotta extend him at this point?
Yes.
Right? The end of the season.
No doubt. I don't even know what the option would be if. He demanded to go elsewhere or something, but you're gonna franchise him, or you're gonna give him like a 3-year deal. What 23 years, 84. That's what he deserves.
Wow, good for Gino.
Packers Bears.
All right, the Packers come back. Aaron Rodgers owns the Bears and all that stuff, and we can still yell about that. Packs sitting at 5-8. Yeah, this was look, this Bears team is kind of running out the clock here, still getting some cool Justin Fields plays. Packers still not tackling very well, but, they came back. Christian Watson with another long touchdown here. Actually, two touchdowns in this one, but he had one of those they got him on a little jet sweep action here, and it was pretty cool just seeing him run much faster than everyone else on the field.
Yeah. I was looking back at my notes on this game, and I think one of the things that I just love and I guess don't understand, because clearly Aaron Rodgers understands football better than you and I, but the beginning of this game when they were trailing by quite a bit, it just seemed like he was in kind of YOLO mode a little bit. And there was that on the 4th and 8 where he just takes a deep shot to Randall Cobb. And there was that play, and then there was another one where he went deep to Cobb. And on both of those, I'm looking at the TV broadcast. So again, this is not the most accurate thing. And as we all know, Game Pass is hot garbage. But it looked like there were other guys open. And, you know, like in cutting routes, like both times, I think I kind of saw Lazard flashing there. And I don't know if that's just him saying, you know, no, I'm going to Randall Cobb here. Like, this is the guy I trust in this situation.
Yeah.
The first one where it was 4th and 8, Cobb did do a really nice job of pretending he was being pulled down by a horse collar. But sometimes it's just like, I don't know if he's just missing the guys or if he's just seeing things a little bit late. And does that maybe just kind of happen?
That's kind of how he's always played, though. But yeah, when he misses guys, he ends up finding someone for a much bigger play. So,
yeah,
you know, I don't know. That's why a lot of play callers were frustrated for him over the years. And but he still obviously made it work at a spectacular level. So, I don't know.
Chargers, Raiders.
Nice day. I thought nice day for the Raiders in the trenches on both sides of the ball. Maybe not saying a whole lot against this Chargers team right now. You had a bit of a Jerry Tillery revenge moment or two, probably just one. But yeah, and Davante Adams made a bunch of really good plays and reminded us of why you want Davante Adams on your team. And the Raiders end up outlasting and spoiling the Chargers just a little bit here.
Boy, if you're the officials, you just have to let that one-handed catch stand, don't you?
Yeah.
Just to have it on the books.
Yeah.
Because that was probably the coolest missed catch that I've ever seen. That was phenomenal. But yeah, this is.
I was gonna say Jamar Chase actually had a better one-handed.
That's true.
He missed it by a lot, but it was a very impressive, just sort of stick'em type of one-hander.
Yeah. But yeah, season-defining loss. I feel like for the Chargers, who are. Wait, talk about wasting your Charizard, Gary, and they are just wasting their Charizard.
There's going to be we have Chargers Dolphins coming up next Sunday night in the flex. This is just going to be a week of terrible quarterback takes. That network that Jamie Horowitz really built in a ridiculous way before he got fired for sexual harassment. Where their whole thing is just people giving terrible sports opinions. This is their week. I mean, this is like their Super Bowl here.
Yeah, this is a tough one. I should note, too, I mean, I was hypercritical of the Raiders after that loss to the Colts. Josh McDaniels has really rebounded. I think this team is coming back. I mean, I picked them to go 9-8 this year. I don't see that as wildly out of the question at this point. They really are playing really well, and there obviously there's no silver medal here if you miss the playoffs with a 30-year-old Davante Adams, but to come back the way that you might have, you know, I think kind of puts you on a good trajectory for next year.
Jaguars, Lions.
So this was a real 40 points for the Lions in this one. Their offense looked great. Maybe the Jaguars defense looked really bad, but this team is. They're pretty good. If they hadn't given away a couple, we'd be talking about maybe a 7-5, 8-4 type of Lions team.
I know. This was, boy, your Jaguars took a pounding in this one, Gary.
They did, and Trevor Lawrence really got his ankle completely mangled, and we'll see how that works going forward. A little bit of C.J. Beathard here. Big day for 49ers backup quarterbacks.
Yeah. My one takeaway with the Jaguars is I've kind of been interested, you know, Travis Etienne is not your classic three down back in that, like, I do think he's going to be overmatched sometimes in pass pro, and I don't know why they haven't. This was my kind of gripe with the Evan Ingram signing from the beginning, where you have a hyper athletic back and then you have a hyper athletic tight end, neither of whom are necessarily super known for their pass protection. And so on third down, you kind of have to pick one of those guys to keep in and then you're just not having one of your good wide receivers out to catch a ball. Does that make sense?
Like, yeah.
You're kind of, I feel like you're not maximizing what you could be maximizing out of someone like Etienne as a kind of a check down, you know, it's 3rd and 8, you don't see anything, you just pop it down and you see if he'll do anything about it, you know?
Steelers, Falcons.
All right, and we wrap it up in Atlanta where the Steelers get another win here. They're up to 5-7. They're respectable. They're out of the Bryce Young Derby at this point, which I always think is neat when like a young quarterback gets to kind of lead his team out of the opportunity to draft his replacement. But yeah, Kenny Pickett, I'm not on the Kenny Pickett bandwagon. I'm open to joining it at a later date, but he's looking better. I thought this was another step forward off the Monday night game. That was, you know, it's still, to me, it's not good enough, but it's better. And you could sort of argue there's something there that will be, you know, kind of above replacement level for a starting quarterback.
I think so. He was decisive today, which I thought was good. And this is what we were billed on him as, you know, or this is how he was billed coming out of the draft. Let's say it in English. I think it was,
that was very Yoda speak.
Yeah. We're actually just reading, my son for his, birthday got all the Star Wars, the golden books, you know, the golden books.
Yep. We have those. Yep.
And I never knew, because I'd never seen any Star Wars before. And so now I know what happens and all of that.
I know.
And I'm very excited.
Same thing with me. I saw all the originals when I was very, very young, and I don't remember them. So those books were all news to me.
Yeah. I was like, oh, wow. Princess Leia and Luke Skywalker, brother and sister. How about that?
Darth Vader.
Yeah.
Take it easy, buddy.
It's a whole family affair. Yeah. So this, you know, this is what we... Everyone promised us that Pickett was going to be. See the guy, throw the ball, move the ball, and then, you know, Alex Smith. This is kind of what we, in the best case scenario, but hadn't worked out to this point, but neither did Alex Smith for a couple years. So I think that there's certainly a window there. My only other of note thing in this game, Gary, was Najee Harris with the most violent stiff arm that I've ever seen in my life. My God, did he just... He just threw a guy to the turf and took his soul. It was that was terrifying.
That's what you're kind of into if you're a Steelers fan right now. And I think getting TJ Watt back probably, and you and I are unfeeling robots and we don't understand the emotion that goes into this, but I think getting Watt back and getting Minkah Fitzpatrick healthy and just sort of getting back to what feels like a Steelers team, which is it's violent football. They are, you know, they strive to be the most violent team in the NFL, and they're kind of getting back to that.
Yeah. It looks good, Gary. And as we've always tried to preach on this podcast, violence is good.
Yes. It's the only answer sometimes.
Do you remember that Daniel Tiger song about violence solving all of your problems?
Yeah, that was a controversial episode. I've never heard so many, never heard so much profanity during a Daniel Tiger episode. The MMQB NFL podcast is Connor Orr and me, Gary Gremling. We are produced by Shelby Royson. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody, and our senior podcast producer is Dan Bloom. Mark Ravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Super Bowl champion Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts, and once you do, please leave a rating and review because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.